It's your voice I want to hear forever. It's your eyes
So welcome to the next installment of the NCMC podcast series. And I'm talking today with one of NCMC's piano teachers and voice teacher, I guess, Kate O'Connor. And we're going to talk about her teaching experience at the Community Music Center. And from what I understand, a lot of your students are kind of not traditional piano students. Probably when they came in for their first lesson, there was something different about them that you noticed right away. Was that a reasonable statement?
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
So are there several students you have that kind of fall into the special students category?
Yes.
Okay. How many would you say you're working with here?
Currently, four.
Four, okay. So I'd sort of like to hear about each one of them, because I'm sure they're all different. And start off with the first one. Had a new student come into the room and tell me what it was like.
So I'll kind of start at the beginning, which is with not one of my current students, but with the very first student who, and I will say that we're on the spectrum.
Uh-huh.
And
the autism spectrum.
Spectrum. And this was something completely new to me, and it was told to me in advance that this person was on the spectrum, and would I at least try? And at the time, I had never worked with anyone before like that. So, but I was willing to try because I feel like every student deserves this, you know, this gateway into music and what it can do for all of us, no matter who you are. I think music has something for everybody. So I needed help with that first student because I really was kind of at a loss how to approach teaching. And I had a friend who is an occupational therapist, and I had several other people who had worked with people on the spectrum. So I got some help to be able to get an understanding of how different sensory information, audible information, like the processing is so different for students on the spectrum. So it was really helpful for me to learn about that. Uh-huh. So that I could sort of put myself in their shoes to be able to be really sensitive to what their learning style was going to be. And that's the thing that's most amazing about every student that I have that's on the spectrum. They're all totally different. The way that they learn is totally different, and the way that I teach them is different. So but it's also informed me for teaching all students, because truly all students are different and everybody's learnings is a little bit different. So it's been an incredible teacher for me as well.
So what did the friend of yours that you talked to, what did they say to you about this, what to expect? Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember some of it, maybe not verbatim. They talked about the ways that we process information and that we have various filters for information, that some of them are cultural, some of them are probably our species. The way that we take in information in the world is different than other species, and the way that we take in information in the West is different than other cultures. And I've had the benefit of studying closely with someone in another culture to get a sense of an understanding of how those filters are different and how people in different cultures actually learn differently because they process information differently. So people on the spectrum are processing information in different ways. And that's partly why it's called a spectrum, is that there's a whole range of ways that the information is filtered when it comes in.
Could you give an example of that, of how the one person processed information differently than...
Yeah, so some of my students, I'm able to give them a lot of verbal cues and talk about things. Other students of mine, it's been more showing them, like, uh-huh. you know, like they're not good at verbal processing. Uh-huh. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time doing verbal processing with them and explaining things to them.
Right.
A lot of times I'm just showing them, this is what you do, uh-huh. you know, and...
So do this on the piano, copy what I did, and okay.
Yeah, and
there's... So your first student came in, and do you remember your first session with the first of these students?
Yes, I do. I remember that I felt totally mystified probably the first few sessions, and spent time a lot of observing, like encouraging the student to play what they had already been doing. It was somebody who had already been playing the piano, and I just spent time observing what they were already doing. And looked for what I could build on, like where they could take what they were already doing and start to grow with uh-huh. it. Like, and the first student was fairly limited, so there was obviously a lot of room for growth, but also there wasn't a whole lot of, so much of what I had to learn from that student was simply behavioral, because the student couldn't communicate well.
So, like, if you asked him questions, he didn't really respond to your questions?
That's right.
Okay. So, how much, what did he play? Do you remember what he played when you...
It seemed like the way that he approached piano was, there was a lot of banging.
Well, it is a percussion instrument.
It is absolutely a percussion instrument. So there was an approach to the piano of it being expressive, but it was expressing frustration, I think, more than other things.
Uh-huh.
And as we progressed in the learning, it became much more melodic. It became much more oriented towards songs
uh-huh.
and less sort of percussive.
Right.
And
so how did you start getting away from the banging?
I think a lot of what kind of doing, showing by example, uh-huh. how it could be different.
So he would play something, he would bang, and then you would play something else that
right.
was similar to what he was doing, but more sensitive.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And also, I had some information from his guardian about songs that he liked,
uh-huh.
so we started... you know, with songs that he was familiar with and liked. And that was very successful as well.
Right.
Using familiar things.
So as you progressed with him, how long did he take lessons with you?
A lot of years. I don't remember the exact
uh-huh.
number.
So, and how was it, what was it like after 6 months compared to when he was banging at the beginning?
So you can let me know if this is too much sharing, but when the person first was coming, they had an aide who would be in the room with me.
Uh-huh.
And partly because this person was prone to agitation and some behavioral habits that were a bit frightening
right.
and challenging.
Right.
So after a few, maybe 3 months, the aide could leave the room, that this person felt calm and
uh-huh.
safe in my presence
right.
and was looking forward to lessons and was really participating in lessons, and I could tell was feeling joy
uh-huh.
in their lessons.
Were they able, did they get more talkative? You were never able to do a lot of verbal communications with them.
No, not with this person.
Uh-huh. And after a year, I'm just curious, if it was 5 years, how did it change over that whole time?
So some of it depends on the person's capacity. Some people on the spectrum have a lot of capacity. And for other people on the spectrum, you figure out what works to help them learn. Mm-hmm. And then you just help them learn more new material, but you're not, you know, like the boundaries of what they're able to learn in terms of what you would teach a student that had a little more capacity, you know, you would be teaching them more skill sets and possibly teaching them how to read music and that kind of stuff.
But so this first person never really got beyond the point of just being able to play and be more comfortable.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And just learn new songs. Mm-hmm. And I think there was still some progression in terms of how quickly they could learn,
So he eventually started learning things, following you more quickly.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So there was some progression in terms of being able to focus more, like feeling safer and being able to focus and being able to be present.
Did you have any reports of how this impacted his life outside of the lesson room? Like, was he able to focus more on other things, or did you not know about that?
I knew that he was able to focus on music differently at home, and that it was calming for him. So that was an activity that could help him calm some of his agitation.
Right.
So, I don't remember because it was quite a long time ago.
Okay.
So I don't remember all of the the benefits.
Okay. So let's move on to the second student. Tell me what your first lesson was like when that happened.
So,
or it could be your third student if
It could be third or fourth. I've been doing this for a number of years, so I don't sort of remember all of them, but I have, you know, I have now three students who've been with me for years, many years. So I can talk about those students in particular.
Sure.
Again, the level of intensity at the first lesson is always interesting, because I think that meeting new people and having new experiences can be challenging. That there's a little more anxiety, I think, around meeting new people and trying new things. And so, again, you know, I feel like the process with all my students on the spectrum has been a period of observation and learning about what their skills already are, what some of their challenges are. Those are the things that I'm really doing a lot of observation. And if they're verbal, I'm asking questions. And just, you know, the first few lessons are really pretty gentle in terms of how much instructing I'm doing. I'm doing a lot more sort of listening and...
Did this other... one of these other students, did they play, did all of these students play a little bit before they came to you?
In each case, a student had at least been playing the piano somewhat. I've had some students who are absolute beginners, and you know, and that's always fun, introducing people to the piano. But the long-term students that I currently have had already been playing.
And could you talk a little bit more about just, you know, pick one of them and talk about the what it was like on the beginning and how it was different from your first student who didn't progress that much?
Yeah, so it's a lot easier when someone's verbal. But there's still... a lot of information that I have to find out from behavioral stuff. And also, I can ask more questions, of course. I'm doing an assessment of how they learn, what they're able to learn, how far I can progress in terms of the musical language, how much of the standard musical language uh-huh. that I would teach most students, how much of that can they really access?
Right.
Because that's some of the limitations, is not necessarily being able to read music. And for three of my long-term students, I've had to create a system of communicating that's individual for each one.
Uh-huh.
Because they have different levels of functioning, and this is what works for them.
Right. And could you just give a little example of what you use for one person and then what you use for the next person?
Sure. So for one person, he has books, music books, that I'm able to help him. He doesn't actually read the music, but he loves to sing. So we both play and sing, and I'm able to take a piece of music, and I've taught him how to use finger numbers. So he's able to use both hands. So he was only playing with one hand at the beginning. He's able to use both hands. And that's something that often I've found with people, that they only use one hand.
Right.
And that teaching them to use both hands and then to do different functions with both hands,
right.
You know, that's a new skill set, which is uh-huh. pretty cool.
Yeah.
And
of course, that's a challenge for all piano players, isn't it?
It is. Absolutely. Absolutely. Everybody goes through that mm-hmm. learning curve. So with this student, I taught him how to play chords so that he recognizes chords, and he also recognizes different, like we have a language for being able to play different chord positions,
uh-huh.
which are also known in classical terms as inversions.
Right.
So we have a system of my being able to explain what those are uh-huh. in writing, and then a system of numbering. He's able to recognize not the notes themselves, but that particular notes go with particular words. So it's, uh-huh. you know, we're adapting uh-huh. music books to be able to use them with his learning system,
right.
and be able to communicate things for uh-huh. him in a way that he can process.
How does he do it? Like listening to a chord and knowing whether it's a major or minor or seven? No.
No. Not at that level.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Although, you know, if it's written as a major chord,
then he'll
play
a
major chord. If it's written as a minor chord, but the understanding of what makes a major chord or what makes a minor
chord.
But
could he hear, like, and there'd be some people who could hear that and not necessarily understand the theory behind it.
Well, I think he can hear if he's playing a wrong chord, whether or not it's processing as major or minor being the difference. But yes, he's absolutely, his ear is tuned into what sounds right and what doesn't sound right.
Okay. So, and then another one of your longtime students?
Kind of has his own system, and we've worked a lot on trying to learn other systems. He likes to revert to his system, which is sort of a hunt and peck around with a finger system. So getting him to use all five fingers, you know, chords,
uh-huh.
five finger melodies, that kind of stuff, took a long time.
Uh-huh.
But I feel like it's really important somehow for the brain processing to use all five fingers uh-huh. and to try to use as much of the physical facility as possible. Uh-huh. I just feel like that's helpful for the wiring in all of our brains.
Right. Did you find that these longer-term students became more attuned to verbal communication over time, or did that not change so much?
They're all verbal. I mean, they're fully verbal.
Uh-huh.
I think it's more music language that's challenging, because it's a very different language.
Right. Do you know, with these some of your other students, whether what you did impacted them in some other part of their life. Did people talk to you about that, or did
yes.
you? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. For one of my students, he likes to perform. So the work that we've done together has enhanced that enormously and brought himself and also other people in his social circle a lot of pleasure seeing him be able to perform.
Right.
And I've encouraged him a lot with songwriting. So, you know, it's like expanding his creativity in other ways has been really lovely to see.
Is he more self-confident also?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, definitely.
How did Jason pick you out to be the person to go to for students who are on the spectrum?
I had already been working with students on the spectrum. And
outside of the music center, you mean?
Outside of the right. music center.
So he knew he knew about that then.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Does he ever have you work with students that play other instruments?
I worked with one student with beginning guitar. And I'm not sure.
Any singers?
I think I have had a couple of singers.
Anything different about that than the piano players that you could talk about as you think back on it?
Well, singing is very different than teaching other instruments, partly because it is so connected in a different way.
Well, I mean, it's your body instead of
another
instrument.
It's your body, and it's, you know, like
right.
all the things that you're training are much more internal. So it's just different in general.
And have you had vocal students that were on the spectrum, so to speak?
I've had at least one or two. And I haven't had a really long-term student who is a vocal student.
So you couldn't really talk about how that was different than your other vocal student. Okay.
No, and the guitar, I think, was very similar.
Right.
You know, we had to figure out a way to approach the learning that was, you know, that was somewhat based, you know, we were working with beginner books, but he also, in order to learn songs that he wanted to learn, because I feel like it's really important, especially for people on the spectrum, but I think for all students, for them to have the opportunity to bring in some material that they want to learn,
right.
that personally has a connection with them.
Uh-huh.
If you're teaching somebody out of a book, most likely you're not going to find it in that book.
Right. Right.
And so you're going to be transcribing in some form of musical language for them how to play that song.
Do you find that people on the spectrum sometimes get the music language easier than they get the verbal language? Or is there anything to that idea?
There is. And some portions of the musical sensitivity is enhanced for at least a couple of my students. In some way, not across the board, but,
right, but in what way are they enhanced, would you say?
I have one student that kind of like one of his specialties is music, and he has kind of a encyclopedic memory of melodies and songs, and it's lovely. And particularly for developing his own songwriting and developing, you know, his own music, that's, you know, that informs the music that
does. He remember melodies better than he remembers lyrics?
I think he remembers both. I couldn't say whether one was stronger than the other.
But you couldn't generalize and say that people on the spectrum have a better ability to hear relative pitches or intervals or chords or than other. It's like you couldn't generalize about that. This is something I was wondering.
No, not in my experience.
Okay.
You know, my experience is fairly limited.
Right. Okay.
But no, I haven't found, you know, I couldn't generalize in that way at all.
It's something that occurred to me that there was a possibility that this language is easier than verbal language, because music is one isn't just another kind of language, and some people are more adapted to it than other people are. So when did you first get into music? Were you very young when you started playing the piano and singing?
Yeah. The story that I'm told is that I was picking out Christmas carols on the piano around age 5 by ear.
Right.
And I started taking piano lessons at age 7.
And classical or popular?
Classical. And took lessons at that time for, I think, 7 years, and then stopped and learned guitar. Partially, you know, shown a few things by friends and then self-taught a bit. And then went back and took classical lessons again later on, took voice lessons later on.
As a teenager?
Young adult.
As an adult?
Yeah.
So you didn't take up the guitar because you heard the Beatles or something like that?
I think it was a folk mass at my church. But I was a bit oblivious to pop music. I mean, I heard it, but it didn't.
So did you sing in a church choir also, or?
We didn't. We had a like a little folk group, so I sang in that.
So what was your first professional music experience?
A gig where I got paid was, I vaguely remember getting paid for playing guitar in a bluegrass band when I was a teenager. If getting paid is the qualification, but in terms of being more of a professional music, that was in my 20s.
Is that all you've ever wanted? Like, did you ever do other kind of work, or have you always made your living from music?
I thought I wanted to be a lawyer, and I worked in a law office as a paralegal for a year and a half, and got that out of my system.
Okay.
And then the next thought about a career was that I might become a farmer, and I managed a food co-op in Burlington, Vermont, and was the produce buyer, so I got to meet a lot of farmers and visited their farms and even worked on some of their farms and looked at that life and said, wow.
It's a lot of work.
That is hard work.
But you're doing it now, right?
Well, music is hard work in a different
way.
But
you're farming now too.
Well,
right?
I am farming. Yes, I am. I'm a homesteader. So I have not lost.
Right.
I actually still love the law and farming in some ways, and do them in different parts of my life.
Right.
But I think my very first love was probably music. And that's what I came back to.
Right. What brought you here from Vermont? Was it a band playing opportunity, or?
I had come to the Valley first to go to Hampshire College.
Oh, I didn't know you were a Hampshire student.
I was a Hampshire student for a year, not long term. And then I moved back to Vermont after I did the stint as a paralegal in Massachusetts, and then moved back to Vermont and eventually came back to the Valley to go to UMass, and I was studying music at that time. I had gone to I went to some music programs at other colleges and did a stint at Ali Akbar College of Music in California, studying East Indian music. So
did you learn sitar or?
No, I was studying vocal.
Vocal stuff.
Vocal and tabla.
So what was your first band in the Valley that when you started singing or playing professionally in the Valley?
So I started, first band, I was in a rock band in, my first rock band in Northampton, and I'm trying to remember the name of the band.
So it was not a memorable band.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun. Uh-huh. And I was making good money at it. And then I joined another band that was doing a lot of weddings, and I couldn't tell you the name of that band either. But I realized then that you could actually, you know, playing that wedding circuit, uh-huh. I realized between this and teaching, I could make a living at this.
Right.
That was sort of a revelation.
Uh-huh.
And I've been making my living ever since.
Ever since. You know what? I think this might be a good place to stop, because we're, you know, these interviews are supposed to be about a half an hour, and you have a student coming. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. It was very interesting to hear about your experience there. I think we're out of time. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's your face.